everybody, welcome back. We are in lecture three today. We're going to go from physics to bits. So before we do that, I just have a few clarifications. I got a few emails. People were confused about a few things. I will post all the slides on the website, and I'm trying to post the lecture slides with, you know, space for notes a few days before your lecture, so you're able to print it out ahead of time. There's also an audio version. I'm recording myself, and one of the TAs listened to the recording, and it said that, you know, it has some problems sometimes, but I'm trying to speak up, and maybe it'll pick up the, there's nothing I can do about it. So it's just a recorder, and you should be good at it, but sometimes it fails. But anyway, I'm recording myself, so if you miss a lecture, you can listen to the audio, and then I read the clicker questions, and you can go back to Sakai and actually answer the questions. Again, on Sakai, you're not going to see the text of the question or the text of your choices, but you will be able to hear me, so you're going to know what the question was and what the right answer was. So, but those audios are available, and they're in the podcast directory, which is linked. There's a link from it to it from our website. Clickers. There have been clicker questions last time, and I will try to have the grades up. We'll try to have the grades up the day after, or maybe 2 days after. Right now, we're still trying to figure out. Yeah, I have a new TA who does the clicker stuff, so it might take a few days right now. But as soon as he's getting used to it, you know, the grades should be up pretty soon. And I hope everybody was able to register your clickers. I will also be able to tell you, hopefully Wednesday, I will tell you people who haven't registered or people who have had problems registering their clickers. Even if you haven't registered your clickers, still click today. But register your clicker as soon as you can, so we can have everybody's grades up. Okay, and I usually send email updates, and I send them through Sakai, and you should all be on Sakai, so you should all be able to get email updates. If you don't get them on Sakai, there's an email tab, and you can go there and read all the emails that I'm sending. But if you're not getting emails, definitely talk to me, because you should be getting those emails. And I also try to send, when I post homeworks, I try to send a reminder or some kind of notification or something like that. Okay, any questions about any kind of, any of these? Clickers, Sakai? Not right now. Okay. We have finally been able to decide on office hours. Right now, we have two TAs. The third TA should be coming to the country, hopefully today. If he's not coming today, they're going to try to find somebody else. But anyway, my office hours will be Tuesdays between 3 and 4 p.m. In Hill Center, which is there's a big building next to, it's really close. And it's room 410. Eric has office hours on Wednesdays and on Fridays. And his office is also in Hill 408. And Moody, his office hours are also on Wednesdays and on Thursdays. So I'm trying to cover all the days of the week. If you can make it on one day, you'll be able to come on a different day. So hopefully the third TA will cover Mondays, I guess it's left. Yeah. Otherwise, we'll try to figure out. If none of these work, or if you want to see a certain person, you can always email the person and ask, can we make an appointment, set up an appointment, and, you know, see them. Definitely try, if you don't understand something. So, clicker questions, homework questions are going to be based on clicker questions. So, if you understand clicker questions, you should be fine with the homework. If you understand homework questions, you should be able to do the exam, because exam questions are going to be based on homework questions. Okay, so, you know, it's a vicious, if you don't understand something and you let it go, you know, you should definitely try to understand it and go to office hours, and, you know, at least homework questions should be very, very clear. Okay. But if you understand clicker questions, you should be okay. All right. So last time we talked about barcodes. We finished up barcodes. We talked about the check digit, and we talked also about Scratch. I'm just interested. I sent out an email. I asked you guys to look at the getting started guide. How many people are able to go through that or look at it? Okay, that's pretty good. What else? Okay, so we'll kind of have some quicker questions right now. And again, make sure whenever you vote, there's a green light. I have to say this a lot of times in the beginning because then there's problems. But make sure there's a green light when you vote. If there's a red light when you vote, raise your hand. Okay, so it's the first question. So this is just to tell you to set your subfrequency. I hope everybody knows how to set up their subfrequencies. It tells you here. Anybody needs these instructions, or are you all cool? Okay, I will skip this. Okay, so the question is, what is mod math? Option A, the name comes from spelling mood wrong. It's math you don't have to do if you're not in the mood for it. B, the name comes from spelling mode wrong. It's the setting on your calculator when you want to do basic math. C, it's up-to-date math. It has to do with the latest concepts in math, the ones invented after computers started being used. D, the name comes from miss out digits. It's math that jumps over numbers. For example, in Math Mod 3, you would count 0, 3, 6, 9, 12, and so on. And E, the name comes from modulo. It's math that goes in circles. For example, in Math Mod 3, you would count 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2, and so on. I'll start at 1:30. More seconds. Okay, stopping. All right. So we said that modulo math means it's actually the remainder of, for example, in Math Mod 3, you would have the remainder of a number. Mod 3 would be the remainder when you divide that number by 3. And so if you count, it would go 0 plus 1 would be 1, 1 plus 1 would be 2, 2 plus 1 would be, 3 divided by 3, you get the remainder 0. Again, 0 plus 1 is 1, and so on. And so most of you got the right answer. I'm trying not to say the right answer so that people who listen to the podcast don't know exactly, you know, this is the right answer. But sometimes I will say. Okay, any questions about this? Okay, what is the check digit for, the code is 0123456789 0. And you have to come up with a check digit. So A, click A for 0 or 5, click B for 1 or 6, click C for 2 or 7, click D for 3 or 8, click E for 4 or 9. 15 more seconds, or I don't know, people need more time. Okay, stopping in 10 seconds. Stopping. All right. That's what I got too. So, let's see. Actually, what did you get for the odd, some of the odd digits? 20. What about the even ones? 25. Okay, so 60 plus 25 is 85. What's the next multiple of 10? 90 minus 85. It's 5. Okay, good. Okay, next one. So your code is 036-000-29-145. What's the check digit? And same option. But I'll stop at 2. Five more seconds. Okay, I'm stopping. Okay, right answer got the majority votes again. All right, so some of the odd digits, what did everybody get for that? The ones that I underlined. 14. What about the even ones? Okay, so you get 42 plus 16 is 58, okay? 60 minus 58 is 2. Good. Okay, what about this one? This one has a missing digit in the middle. So you have 0, 1, 2, then you have to find the fourth digit. The rest of it is 3, 3, 3, 4, 4, 4, 4, and the check digit is 5. Okay, I'll stop at 4 minutes. Stopping? No? Okay. I'm stopping. Alright. The right answer got the majority votes again. So, this is a little trickier, right? Because it's not the rule for the check digit. It's not the same rule. But the general rule is that if you just see the number as a whole, 3 times the odds plus the evens, including the check digit, gives you a multiple of 10. So that's the general rule. And that's why we say, in order to find the check digit, we add 3 times the odds plus the evens minus the check digit. And then we look at the next multiple of 10, and we subtract the check digit from that. And that gives us the sum. So if we write this as 3 times the odds plus the, let's call it even, plus check digit, is a multiple of 10. So if I subtract check digits from both sides, I get 3 times odds plus evens is a multiple of 10 minus check digit. And therefore, check digit is a multiple of 10 minus these guys. Okay? But the general rule is this one. And so, let's see. 3 times the odds. For that, I got 48, right? Okay, what about the evens? How much? I got 12 plus x. Right? How many people got 12 plus x? Okay, good. I was worried. So if we add those things together, those two numbers together, it should give us a multiple of 10. So we said that this is 48. This is 12 plus x, and we need a multiple of 10. So this is going to be 60 plus x is a multiple of 10, right? So x being a digit, the only choice is for x. How much did you get? What's the value? 5? So 60 plus x needs to be a multiple of 10. It's either 0 or 10, right? But it can't be 10, so it's 0. Does that make sense? Yes? Sorry.
So this word, I added all the points to the check digit. So just if you took off the check digit and then subtract it from the next one. So odds plus the evens, now they're able to connect the check digit. So subtract it from
the next multiple of 10, right?
Yes.
Okay, so. Right, but the check digit isn't here. Did you get 5? Okay. So, can you say that again?
So, where did it was 3 times the R.
Okay, so you got 3 times the R. Okay, that worked. Give me a
and then the evens plus the check digit. So, I did evens plus the check digit.
Evens plus check digits, which is this one. It's a multiple of 10. No.
It's going to be 17.
I see. Okay. So here's how you do it let's call it the classic way. Alright, so let's ignore this rule. Okay, so we're gonna say that the check digit is, we don't know the check digit. Let's pretend that we don't know the check digit. So the odds give us, we all agree, 48. Okay, anybody disagree with that? No. Okay. So the evens give us, okay, 1 plus 3 is 4, 12 plus 6. I think I forgot to subtract. Yeah, okay. I see what the problem is. All right, so that is, that gives us 60 plus x. And, right, so 60 plus, so 5 is, okay, so this needs to end in a 5, right? This needs to be, okay, so we know that 5, the check digit, is the next multiple of 10. So multiple of 10. Minus 60 plus x, right? Right? Okay, and so this is not 0, so this x needs to be 5 because the next multiple of 10 is probably, okay, the next multiple of 10 is 70, minus 60 minus 5 gives us 5. And that works out. Okay, thank you. Okay, good. So what was x again? Okay, this is the last one. This, you have to find the first, but there's only three choices. So remember, the first digit is the what kind of product it is. And so we said that if the product is a 2, so if the first digit is a 2, then it's an item that is sold internally by the store. If the first digit is 3, then it's going to be a national, it's going to be a drug with a national drug company code, and if it's anything else, it's a general product. So you have to find the first digit and then decide if it's a 2, if it's a 3. So if it's a 2, click A. If it's a 3, click B. And if it's none of those, if it's something else, click C. And the code is question mark, so first digit unknown, 90531-33114, and check digit is 9. Okay, I'll be stopping in 30 seconds. Five more seconds. Stopping. Okay, this is more tight, right? All right. Okay, so. Questions? I think it has the majority, but okay. All right, so that's all about check digits and barcodes. There will be problems on the homework and probably the exam. I think you all know how to, most of you know how to do this. I don't think this is a problem. So on the first lecture and last time we kind of talked about this idea of abstraction, taking hard problems and dividing them into more simple and more simple problems. And we saw how the computer goes from this very basic barcode, patterns of ink, to 95 zeros and ones, we call bits. And those 95 bits encode a 12-digit number. We only need 11 digits. The 12 one is kind of just a check digit that doesn't have a lot of information other than this is an okay code. And then the 11 digits give us the product. They're a unique code for each product has a unique code. And so today we're going to see what is this basic level on the computer? What happens on that very basic level, where all the information is encoded, and how is the information encoded? So computers are designed from a hierarchy of parts, and there was a diagram on the first lecture, but just to reinforce that idea, there's all these, it's not like, you know, when somebody makes a computer, they don't just make the whole thing, they usually work on one of these parts. And there's the physical part, there's the electricity, then there's logic gates, and so on. We're going to go through all those parts. But the interactions between different parts are very simple and easy to understand. The parts are in themselves are complicated, but they're designed so that the interactions between them would be very simple and straightforward. And so they're not based so much on what the technology, how these parts are, you know, what are the materials that they're made of. They're more based on ideas, and that's how people have tried to make computers out of, sticks, and there's all kind of mechanical computers, and some people use water and Legos, and we're actually going to see some examples, which are pretty cool. But you can take these ideas, and you're not bound to transistors or electricity. You can just, you know, make them out of something else. They'll be huge, but you know, you'll be able to make them and build a whole computer out of whatever you choose to do. And so they're actually everything, you know, the basic parts, the basic wiring are circuits in silicon. And that's how what computers are made of today. And if you look at, this is the Xbox, an old Xbox chip layout, but I put up this picture. I like this picture because it shows how, even though, you know, there's a lot of math, you know, Xbox chips do a lot of computation. There's a lot of, they're very intensive, you know, all the graphics and everything. But they're very, it's very organized. And you can see the CPUs are the central processing units. They need three of these. This one has three. You know, there's a lot of things going on, so it needs to compute a lot and very fast. But they're very, they're, you know, they're right here and you can see them. This is the memory. This is kind of, it's called a bus, so, you know, it makes sure that, you know, the CPUs don't all yell at the same time, that, you know, the communication is organized and that it works well, and so on. You know, this goes to, you know, the music. This probably connects to the display. So, you know, it's very clean and very, on this level, you can actually see that, you know, how it's actually organized. And every part takes care of a different problem. So let's assume that, you know, we want to make a robot. We want to have a robot friend. Okay, let's say we give up on humanity and we just want to make our own little friend out of wires. We could, you know, we could gather parts, we could take pieces of metal, we could, you know, make it look the way we want it to look. But then there's the part where, okay, it has this little light, and how does that light, you know, when does that light turn, what determines when that light goes on and off? What determines it's when it's moving? What determines all those things? We could put the robot together, but that part that we might call, you know, maybe thinking, it's very hard. That's the hardest part. It's very hard to figure out how to do that. And actually, in computers, it's called not thinking, but computation. And so this, so we have this problem, right? You want to make this object that actually does certain tasks. How do you do that? How do you go about, you know, implementing those things? And so this, actually, George Boole, a long time ago, wrote a book that is called An Investigation of the Laws of Thought. So, you know, this thought, is thought governed by, you know, any laws? You know, he tried to formalize that. And so he tried to show that the logic of human thought can be implemented by mathematical operations. And this is not to say, you know, emotions or anything like that, just the logic. And that from that, we get the Boolean logic, which is just the language for describing and manipulating logical expressions. And we want to know if things are true or false. So his whole logic is based on the Boolean logic, is based on basically, you know, what's true and what's false, and so on. And we're going to talk a little bit about this Boolean logic to see how it works. So after that, Claude Shannon actually introduced Boolean logic into computer science. And what he did was he was trying to make a game of chess that was automated. Or, you know, he had this idea of, you know, building mechanisms that imitate human thought. And so what he did was, in his PhD thesis, he described a system where the Boolean logic can be implemented with electrical circuits. And more specifically, he took switches and he said, okay, if I'm closing the switch, that means that, you know, whatever the switch encodes, let's say it's raining outside. If it's raining outside, I'm going to close this switch, and then one little light will turn on, and then somebody else who maybe doesn't have a window will see that it's raining, will know that it's raining outside. If I open the switch, then the light will go off, and then the person will know that it's maybe sunny or it's actually not raining outside, right? So he made, and we're going to actually see how you can encode true and false into electrical circuits. So the bit is actually the unit of information. It's the basic block, building block of information and of computer science. So that on the most basic level, we have the bits. And so, you know, each area of study, each field of study has their own building blocks. And so a few examples are, you know, chemistry. You know, they talk about molecules, and maybe they go even lower than that. Physics, you know, they look at elementary particles, and they say that everything builds on top of those. Math, you know, they use sets in certain, you know, areas of math. Computer science is basically built on bits. And what bits are, they're the unit of information, and one bit can be either true or false. And we also say we encode true by 1 and false by 0. We encode true by on, something's on, and false by off. And so this is the basic idea, basic unit of information. And again, we have all these different representations because it doesn't matter what you use. You just need some kind of encoding of true and false. And it can be numbers, it can be switches, it can be water. You know, you have water through this pipe, it's true, you know, something's true. You don't have water through this pipe, something's false. And so, does everybody know what the symbol means? What is it? The power symbol? And I think it's cool because I see it as a 0 and a 1 at the same time. So, you know, if your computer is on, it's 1. You can press the button and it will become 0 off. And if it's off 0, you press it and it becomes on. So it changes the state of your computer. So a little more details about the bits. The name is actually a portmanteau word. It's made of two different words. It comes from binary digit. So, you know, in your normal numbers, the numbers that we're used to, are called decimal digits. But here we have, you know, we have binary digits. We only work with zeros and ones. And in normal life, we work with 0 through 9. And we make all the numbers out of the decimal digits, which are 0 through 9. But here, we're only going to work with 0 and 1. And other examples of portmanteau words are, you know, I'm sure you can come up with some. Motel is motor and hotel. You know, ginormous. Any other ideas of words that are made of two or more words?
Brunch.
Okay. Okay, there's so many. There's a spork, which is spoon and fork. There's actually chork, which is chopstick and fork. I didn't know that one. I found it this morning. There is, my favorite one was croissant sandwich. It's a croissant and a sandwich. Or, you know, transceiver, it's transmitter and receiver. Blaxploitation, does anybody know what that means? It's a whole, I guess a while ago, there's a whole, you know, series of movies on how, you know, the African Americans were exploited, and, you know, it's a very hot topic. There was a lot of movies, you know, social media, and it was called Blaxploitation. There is also a cool one that I like is bash, which is bang and smash, and so on. Okay, so these are just, you know, words that are composed in of two or more words, different words. Okay, so why do we choose a bit? What's so special about the bits? Well, bits are the simplest unit that we can use to make a distinction between two things. We have a 0 and a 1. We have an on and an off. If we only use one object, it would be very, very hard to encode anything. So if we have just work with sticks, right? To encode the number 9, we would have to have 9 sticks. It becomes very tedious and long. It turns out bits are very convenient that way. And also, they're very powerful. With bits, we can encode anything. So everything in the computer, everything digital, if you hear the word digital, it's made, it's encoded with bits. So movies, anything on the internet, anything basically digital is have that property. And it's very helpful to have this distinction, right? So, you know, Escher is a painter, and he has this whole series of paintings, and they're all black and white, and, you know, he creates all kinds of cool illusions, like, you know, fish are white and the birds are black. You know, God divided the light from the darkness. So you have this whole, it's very helpful to have distinctions, and they're all around us, too. Everything is digital. So I like this image because you have an analog, you know, sound. So, you know, when you buy a CD with, you know, music, it's, I'm not sure if it's digital all from the beginning, but the recordings sometimes are analog, and they're better quality. But then they divide it into, they take the continuous signal and they make it into a digital signal. And, you know, the human ear can't tell the difference, but, you know, if you have really good equipment, you will need a better quality. So you need to make the all the frequencies smaller, granular. Well, there's different details, levels of detail. But if you look at pictures, you know, a picture from a distance on a computer can look very nice and smooth, but if you zoom in, you're going to see that there's all kinds of little squares that are the same color, and it becomes very fragmented, like a puzzle kind of. And that is because the images are, you know, the smallest unit of the image is a pixel, and a pixel can only have one color. And if the resolution of the image is pretty poor, then you're going to, if you zoom into the image, you're going to see that it's very, it's made of, you're going to be able to see the pixels, actually. But all the images now are digital, most of them. So let's start talking about this Boolean algebra. What is it? We have normal, regular algebra. And in regular algebra, you have variables, right? You probably learned this in school. You have variables that stand for numbers, and they can take different values. And you say stuff like, you know, variable x equals 3, variable p equals 22 over 7, and so on. Then you have, with these variables, you can combine them into binary operations. Binary means each operation takes two numbers and outputs one number. And for example, of binary operations are, you know, summing, multiplying, anything that takes two numbers and outputs one number. And you also have unary operations. And unary operations are operations that only take one number. For example, square root is a unary operation. You have negation, and so on. Okay, so this is common, should be common knowledge, hopefully. This class is a prerequisite. I think that's one reason why it does, because people need to know this stuff. Okay, so now we're going to switch to Boolean, and it's going to be the same kind of thing, only translated to Boolean. The variables in Boolean algebra stand for bits. So you have the same kind of thing, x, y, z, t, whatever name you like, but this time the values can only be true and false. And you say stuff like z equals x and p, which is an operation. And you have the same kinds of things. You have binary operations, operations that take two binary numbers and combine them into a third binary number. For example, AND is a binary operation. It's also called conjunction. For example, if you have a variable that's true and a variable that's false, true and false will be false. And we're going to have a table, and you guys can print that out and take it with you. You don't have to memorize it. You also have OR. We're going to be talking about that too. So, for example, true or false gives you true. And then you have unary operations with only take one numbers. For example, NOT. If you negate false, it becomes true, and so on. Okay, so this is exactly the same kind of thing, only working with different values and different operations. But it's exactly, you know, there's rules that you can, you know, find. And there's nothing mysterious. It's only they look different, and we're just not used to them. So So let's take a look at one of the binary operations, which is OR. So for example, you have something like this rule. You know, a movie is rated R. If a movie is rated R, you know, the person who's watching it needs to be 17 or older, or they need to be accompanied by a guardian, adult guardian. Okay, so this is just a rule. It has an OR in it. So when, you know, when is it okay to watch an R-rated movie? Well, you either are older than 16, or you have an adult guardian with you, right? So, and we usually, we don't mean, when we say OR, we actually mean either OR. We mean it's either this or that. Logic OR says it's okay, either one is good. If either one is good, if either one is satisfied, if either one of those rules, then your rule is going to work. And we're going to see examples. So let's say we make a variable that we call X, and X is going to be true if the person that we're talking about is older than 16. And Y is going to be another variable, which is going to be true if the person is accompanied by an adult. Okay, so X or Y will be true if that person can see an R-rated movie. So let's go to some examples. What about if we have Bill is 22 and he is watching the movie with his stepdad. So X, remember, was if the person is older than 16, and X in this case is true because Bill is 22. And then Y is, does the person have an adult with them? And this person actually does have an adult with them. So Y is also true. Is this person allowed to see an R-rated movie? Yes. Because, well, he basically fulfills both requirements. And so X or Y will be true in this case. Now, let's say Samantha is 17 and is seeing the movie alone. Is she allowed to see it? Yeah, because she fulfills one of the conditions. She is older than 16. What about Seth, who is 16 and watches the movie with both his parents? Right, because he has at least an adult with him. What about Jessica, who is 13 and watches it with friends from school, who are probably her age? No, because she fails both conditions. Right? And so you see how in this logic OR, you need to only fulfill one, at least one of them. If one of them is fulfilled, if one of the conditions is fulfilled, your statement will be true. Unlike the way we use OR in normal language, and to mean either OR. Okay. So now, what about AND? We're gonna look at AND now, and a good example is the rule that Rutgers has about, you know, when are you allowed to park at Rutgers? So you need, this is a rule that they have. It says all vehicles parked on university property must be registered and display a valid Rutgers permit. Okay, so you have something and something. And in this case, you need both things to be fulfilled. So let's say that X is a variable that is true if the car is registered, and Y is and false if it's not, and Y is a variable that is true if the car displays a valid Rutgers permit and false if it's not. So X and Y will be, if X and Y is false, the car cannot be parked at Rutgers. If X and Y is true, then the car can be parked at Rutgers. So let's take Bill's car, which is registered and displays a valid permit. So in this case, X was that the car is registered, it's true, and Y was if it displays a valid permit. In this case, is Bill allowed to park at Rutgers? Yes, so X and Y will be true. What about Samantha, who is registered, but her permit fell off? False, right? She fails one of them, so this is going to be false. Al's registration is expired, but somehow his permit is still okay. That's not going to work. And Jessica is visiting with no registration or permit. This is going to fail because she fails both conditions. This is not, if you're under 18, you are not allowed to buy cigarettes. So X will be, the person is under 18. You know, you go to the store, you have to show an ID. If you fail, they're not going to give you cigarettes. So, you know, if Samantha's 17 and she's buying cigarettes, is she actually going to be able to? No. Okay, and if, you know, Seth is 21, he is not under 18, so he can buy cigarettes. Okay? Does that make sense? Any questions? So here are some kind of summary. This is a summary of the operations that we looked at. So we have everything in logic that we're going to be talking about can be basically reduced to these simple operations, and or not. If you understand these, you're pretty much set with logic. So X and Y is true only if both of them are true. X or Y is true only if either X or Y are true. So either X or Y, it doesn't matter which one of them will make the statement true. And not X is true only if X is false. Okay, so they're a lot like the English meanings, but they're not as ambiguous. They're more unambiguous. So this is a slide that you can print out and bring with you to class, to the exams. This is just a table that shows what happens if, you know, what are the operations? What is the table for these operations? And because in Boolean algebra we only have trues and falses, we can just make a table, right? It would be crazy to make a table in math with all the numbers that we have. You know, what is x plus y? Well, let's make a table. That would be impossible because we have an infinite number of numbers. But in this case, we only have two values, so we can just make a table. So, you know, if I ask you what is true or false, you can just go in here, true or false is true, okay? And you can see how and is very picky, right? It needs both A and B to be true in order to be true. If anything is false, it's going to be false. But or is very tolerant, and it's false only if both of them are false, but if either of them are true, if there's any kind of true, it's going to be true. And not basically just reverses the value of the variable. Okay? And if you have an operation, the order of operations is going to be parentheses first, then you do the not, then you do the and then you do the or. Remember how in math you have, you know, multiplication before addition? It's the same kind of thing. So this is the order of operation. So by all means, have this slide with you anytime, and you can just look up stuff, and you don't have to memorize it. Okay, so there's a really cool law in logic that connects ands, ors, and nots, and it's called the De Morgan's Law. And what the De Morgan's Law says, after you realize that not x is actually x, two negations make a... Well, if you look here, if A is false, then not A will be true, and not A will be false again. So I think if you think a little bit, you're going to realize that not X is X. That's pretty straightforward. And then the Morgan's Law just flips the ands and the ors. And so it says, you know, not, if you have not X and Y, the not gets distributed, and the and becomes an or between them. And not X or Y, again, the not gets distributed, and the or becomes an and. It basically distributes the not, and it changes the, you know, the or becomes an and, then the and becomes an or. And this makes sense logically. For example, if you have X is the car is registered, and Y is the car displays a valid Rutgers permit, you have accepted. Let's say, is the car going to be accepted, or is it not going to be accepted? And so, accepted, in order for the car to be accepted, you need to fulfill both X and Y. So I'm going to say accepted is X and Y, right? Because you need to both be registered and display a valid permit. So what happens, when is the car not accepted? Well, it's not accepted if either conditions fail, right? If it either doesn't have a permit or display a permit, or it's not registered, right? So if either of those conditions fail, it's not going to be accepted. So either the car is not registered, so either not X, or the car does not display a valid permit, which is not Y, right? So not accepted, not X and Y, equals not X or not Y. Okay, so this, the last line just says, you know, it codes the logic of when is the car not accepted. Okay, so you have to check for both conditions. Okay, any questions? Okay, so let's try these things. Let's assume that X is true and Y is false and Z is false. What is not X going to be? False. What about not Z? True. What about X and Y? False, because N needs both of them to be true. What about Y or Z? False. Good. What about Y or paren X and not Z? Okay, so I'm going to do the paren first. And inside the paren, I'm going to do the not before the and. So not Z is true, and X is true. So inside the paren, I have true and true, which gives me true. And then I have Y or paren, so false or true gives me true. Okay? Well, you just need the tables printed out. That's why I'm not making a big deal out of it. But print them out next time, and there's going to be clicker questions, and you guys can just look up stuff in the tables. Okay, so, you know, this is pretty, you know, it took me about 10 minutes to explain this to you guys, and I think that most of you kind of got it. How can we automate them? How can we make these, like, automatic? Is there a way of making these things... Can you think of any way? Like logic, how can we make this automatic? Like if I was a cop and I was very lazy, how could I check really quickly, or how could I, without very much thinking, or make a robot? I want to make a robot that is checking, is going into parking lots and checking the cars that are there and deciding who needs a ticket. How do they make that? Yeah.
Set conditions for whatever you need to check, what you want to do.
Yeah, you can set conditions, and you know, the robot can go and scan the permits or something like that. It could check the license plate. It may have a way to read the license plate and something like that. Okay. So those are obviously, you know, complicated, but let's try to cover the basic before we go into, you know, more fancy stuff like robots checking our parking permit. And this is the simplest thing that Shannon came up with. He just said, okay, A is going to be my Boolean variable, which is going to be true or false, and I'm just going to make a switch. And the switch, if the switch is closed, that will be a variable that is true. And if the switch is open, that is a variable that will be false. So just as in math, you know, if you choose to have a variable X, you can say, you can decide X will be 5, X will be 50, X will be Y plus Z. You decide the value. Just like in normal, regular algebra, you can decide the value of the Boolean variable and then just set a switch. Open the switch or close the switch. And that will make, you know, that will encode your value. And we can show this by connecting the variable to a light bulb. So this will be our battery. This is a battery. And if you close the switch, if the variable is true, that will turn on the light bulb, which kind of is a sign of for on and true and one. So light is on will be true. If we open the switch, then the light will go off. And there's actually a Scratch program that we put on the Scratch website. And this is the switch. That's your battery. And you can see electricity is purple. If you see a purple line, that's usually electricity. A wire without electricity will be black. And then you can just click on the switch, and when you close it, the light turns on. And if you open it, the light turns off. So this is pretty, this is just a little demo to make things a little intuitive, okay? So in this case, an open switch, again, is a Boolean variable that is false, and you can see that the light bulb is off. If I close the switch, it will be a variable that is true, and the switch, the light bulb will turn on, okay? So you guys can play with this if you want. And we have different symbols, the battery, this is the battery. We have switches, which can be open or closed. We have light bulbs and ground, whatever. If you're an if you like electricity and electric circuits, we try to make sure that everything's kind of correct and that we define our terms. Okay, I just went too far. Okay. Sorry. So, let's see. What about putting things together? What happens for, let's make a little table. Let's see what happens when we put two switches, two Boolean variables, in parallel. So I have A and B, and let's call the first light, let's call it light one. And there's also a Scratch project for this one. That's not it, this is it. Okay, so let's see. The higher one is A and the lower one is B. What happens if they're both, what happens if A is false and B is false? Which they are right now, they're open. What is the light? False. Good. Let's close B. What happens to the light? It becomes true. Okay, what about if we open B and we close A? True. What about if we close both of them? It's going to be true because electricity can come either way. Okay, good. So that is our light. I don't know how many of you have your tables printed out, the lecture notes, lecture slides, but what is that? What does that look like? Like an OR, right? So light one is A or B. Very good. That's it. That's right. Okay, what about if we do this series? Let's make another team. So let's say A, B, and light two. What happens if they're both false? False. What if I close B? It's false. Doesn't help. What if I open B and close A? It's going to be false. What if I close both of them? It's going to be true. What is that? And, right. So we need them both to be closed in order to have the light on. So light two is A and B. So we made an OR and an AND out of circuits, basically. That's what we did, right? The NOT is a little more complicated, but So when they're wired in parallel, either of them will light the bulb. It doesn't matter which one of them is closed. As long as one is closed, the electricity can't reach the light bulb. If they're both open, not really. In the second case, you need both C and D to be closed in order for electricity to be reaching the light bulb. If one of them is open, that's going to cut the connection between the battery and the light bulb. So you need them both to be closed. Okay, let's look at this one. So there's a few things that you haven't seen before. We have a switch A. which is connected by a rigid stick. This is a rigid stick. It doesn't look like a rigid stick, but let's pretend that it's a rigid stick to another switch, to this switch. So they both basically move together. You know, if I close A, they're both going to close. If I open A, they're both going to be open. And this is the same. This is the same deal for B. If I open them, they're both going to be open. They're connected together. But I control one of them. I control if they're open or closed. But they're both going to be. B is going to be both of them. So let's see. What if we have? Let's figure out what is light one and light two in this case. So
I can make another.
So let's fill out this table. What happens if A and B are both false? What happens to light one? It's going to be false, right? Well, right, because there's no connection. But there's no way electricity can reach the light one. What about light two? It's going to be false because the only way electricity can reach light two is through this wire, and it's disconnected from the power source because B is open. B is false. Okay. What about if we close B? What about if B becomes true? What does light one become? It becomes true, right? Because electricity can reach that way. Okay. What about light two? What's that going to be? Okay. So again, B closes, this switch closes, but this switch is still open. So we don't have a connection between this power source and the light bulb. So that is still going to be false. What about if we close A but open B? What is going to happen to light one? Yes, so A is open, this connection closes, electricity can't reach the light bulb. What about light two? It's still false because this is still open. Okay, let's move to true and true. What is light one? True. What about light two? True. Good. Okay. So now, what are light one and light two? False the rest of the time. Okay, so light one is A or B. Light one is A and B. And so we have, this way, we have an and an or at the same time in the same circuit. So that's kind of cool. Okay, now let's take a real problem, a problem in real life, and see if we can encode it in this kind of weird switch bits kind of idea. And we're going to play a game. And I will go first. This is the purpose of the game. The purpose of the game is, so it's called NIM, basically. And you have a pile of objects, and, you know, let's say you have 10 objects. You know, on our turn, so I'm going to play against you guys. When each of us will take turns, so you are going to take a turn, I will take a turn. We will choose to take either one or two objects. And whoever takes the last object wins. Okay? So if you take the last object, you win. If I take the last object, I win. Okay? So who should go first? Maybe I'll go first. Just to see how things work. So I will choose one object. You can choose to take two or to take one object. One object or two objects?
Two.
Okay, I will choose one object.
Two.
Okay, oops. And I would take two objects. And you take two and you win. Good job. Okay. What about, you guys go first. I will take two. I'll take two. One, and I will take two, and I win. Okay. So, let's try again. You guys go first. What are you going to choose? You're going to choose one. Are you sure? How many people want one? How many people want two? It's equal. All right. Well, I will...
Two.
Two. Okay, great. Then I will choose two, two. I will choose one. Oops. Does anybody, can anybody, so okay, so what's the strategy here? There's definitely a strategy. What's the first thing you need to do? Start by taking
one.
Why is that? The other player chooses two, then you can... Well, you guys chose two, so...
No, actually, first, if you both choose two, you'll end up with three.
Okay, so we definitely know that whoever ends up with three is has lost the game, basically, right? If you guys are left with three, no matter what your choice is, if you choose one, I'll take two. If you choose two, I'll take one, right? So the idea is to leave your opponent with three, right? Okay, that's, what about like your second to last choice? Like what would be the strategy? Go ahead.
Leave them with six.
Okay, leave them with six, right? If you leave them with six, okay, let's say I leave you guys with six. If you choose one, I will take two and leave you with three. If you choose two, I will take one and leave you with three. And I win. If I leave you guys with three, I win. Right? Okay, so what about the next step? So, okay, leave you guys with... I need to leave my opponent with six. Okay, so what do we do with that? We have 10 objects. Nine, right? So let's see. If I take one on the first... If I go first, I definitely want to take one. Because I leave you with nine, and then you take... If you take two, I take one and leave you with six. If you take one, I'll take two and leave you with six. And I basically win at that point. Okay? If you guys go first, and you know, you don't know the rules, if you say two, you know, I should have said, in the beginning, I should have said two. Because, I said one, and I left you with six objects or something like that, right? So that was... Wait, if you take two in the beginning, I take two and leave you with six. Okay? And so on. All right, so next time we will see how we can make this with switches and light bulbs and...